No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Jess Root from Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, and we are here for the All Cardinals show here on a recording on a Tuesday night as the Cardinals came away with another big victory, finishing off the Detroit Lions after a slow first quarter. They exploded for 28 points in the second and had forced five turnovers and rolled to a 42-17 victory over Detroit, improving to 4-1 of the season. So Seth Cox, who is on the line with me, and I are going to talk about, well, a whole bunch of Cardinals stuff, as it is the all-Cardinals show this week. I'm talking about your 4-1 Arizona Cardinals. In terms of news, what's been going on? Yes, the Cardinals finished 4-1, but there's been some movement on the roster because of some unfortunate injuries. The Arizona Cardinals have lost three players to injury, two to injured reserve. Inside linebacker Kenny Demis tore his ACL, lands on the injured reserve to end his season. Likewise, safety Chris Clemens injured his hamstring. He is being placed on injured reserve. That move, as of Tuesday night, has not been announced officially by the team, although Bruce Arians did state it on his radio interview on Sirius XM NFL Radio. That move will happen. To replace Kenny Demons on the roster, the Cardinals have made a signing, probably one that you've heard about, as they added veteran, you know, defensive end, outside linebacker, essentially veteran pass rusher Dwight Freeney to the roster. As another injury that affected the team is not season ending, but Alex Okafor, starting outside linebacker and team leader with sacks, with two on the year from the first week of the season. He injured his calf, and will be out 2 to 4 weeks, up to a month. And so the Cardinals have added a little bit of pass rush threat, another veteran presence, and also, kind of, if you've noticed the trend, another really well-established veteran in the league who happened to be unemployed. And he joins the Cardinals on a one-year deal for the vet league minimum, plus incentives that can earn him up to another $1 million, depending on whether he can get up to or beyond 12 sacks. But those are the roster moves as of Tuesday. If with the news that Chris Clemens will end up on injured reserve, there has not been any talk as to who might that be to replace him on the roster, although there was a report Tuesday evening that the Cardinals worked out former Patriots cornerback Robert McClain, I guess. And I don't know much about him, but that's something to take a look at over the next few days, whether they bring up a guy like Gabe Martin off the practice squad or another defensive back, and what will happen to the role of Sean Weatherspoon moving forward now that Demons is done for the year. But we'll talk more about that as we get to go in with our all-Cardinals show here on Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'd like to let you know, of course, that Revenge of the Birds Radio is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading source of audio content. And for Revenge of the Birds Radio listeners, we have a special deal for you. You can get a free audiobook download. Head over to audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. You can sign up for a free month of service, download a free audiobook, and check out the service there. Again, that is audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds to take advantage of that offer. But let's go ahead and talk Arizona Cardinals football. Seth Cox joins me on the line. How are you doing today, Seth? How is everything?
Oh, it's good, Jeff. How are you?
And doing great, especially with the Cardinals getting another big win. It started off a little shaky, but, you know, we're going to talk about some good things. We're going to talk basically impressions from the game, good and bad. We're going to talk about there's a special stat that almost, if you look at it, it's historically, it gives the Cardinals a lock for the Super Bowl. Yes, after 5 weeks of the season, we know they are Super Bowl bound based on a statistic we'll discuss. Is it real? We're going to talk about the impact of the signing of Freedy and the injuries, and look ahead to the Steelers. I do not believe I have not made any arrangements for a preview show about the Steelers game coming up this weekend as the Cardinals travel to Pittsburgh after spending the week in West Virginia at the Greenbrier Hotel and Resort. I will be heading out of town. What I consider poor planning by a relative who was getting married. I will be out of town and will not be able to do a podcast preview. So, yes, I get to tend to familial duties and end up in, you know, Utah for a certain spouse's sibling getting married at a time when I'd rather be watching football, but, you know. That's life in the big city here. So let's go ahead and get started, Seth. Let's talk about the game on Sunday. Cardinals win 42-17. What were your takeaways from the game? Let's talk about good. What were the biggest impressions you took from that game?
I think it starts up front on both sides of the ball. You have to be happy with how the offensive line came out and played, and the way they were able to, in the run game, kind of just control the line of scrimmage. You know, another 100-yard game from Chris Johnson. They clearly had, I don't know if it's DA or one of the coaches or just Johnson himself, they clearly knew that he was at 96 yards and said, okay, go back in. Like, because once he got that 100 yards, then he was done. So
Yes, that was, I noticed the exact same thing. I was like, oh, he came out, someone knew where he was at. He gets one carry for 7 yards. Oh, and his day was over. I'm like, oh, good for them. That's always cool to see.
But, you know, it's fun to watch that. I mean, as I don't even know what the word we're looking for is. As fun as it is to throw the ball around and be a, you know, dominant team through the air, I've always enjoyed power football and being a fan of a team that can just run. That's why I despise those, you know, the Harbaugh 49ers so much, was because they kind of built the team that I'd always wanted to cheer for. And so, you know, now all of a sudden you're seeing a little bit of the Cardinals and the ability to run the football and protect Carson Palmer a little bit. Yeah, he got drilled on that first series, but after that, you know, he was relatively kept clean, and I think just the dominance up front was fun to watch. I thought Jonathan Cooper played his best game of the season after he got beat up early. You know, and we're talking about that first play where Bobby Massey's guy gets credit for the sack, but Jonathan Cooper ends up in Carson Palmer's lap in about 1.5 seconds, and outside of that, though, I mean, the stunt where Upati and Del Deer tried to, you know, double up the guy and Ansa came in free. I mean, I'm trying to really think. I mean, what other negative plays were there after that? I mean, it seems like they got chewed out on the sidelines and then everything just kind of clicked.
And that's pretty much it. I mean, what I got from the game, at least on the offensive side of the ball, was, my goodness, what is this world in which the Cardinals are one of the best running teams in the NFL? Currently, they are, I believe, they're third in yardage in rushing yards, and they're tops in the league with nearly 4.96. So if you average to the nearest 10th, then they're averaging 5 yards a carry this year. They were dead last a year ago at 3.3. They lead the NFL in rushes for more than 10 yards or more with, I think it's 23. They had another 5 such plays on Sunday. And they got Chris Johnson ripping off a 25-yarder, 2 for more than 40. And then the second that Johnson comes out of the game, they bring in Andre Ellington, who busts out a 63-yarder for a score, looking like exactly Andre Ellington we wanted to see since his rookie year. The Cardinals suddenly are one of the best rushing teams in football, and it doesn't make sense because I've never seen this before. The only thing close to this I can say would be the 2009, I believe it's the 2009 Cardinals, who had a formidable attack between Beanie Wells and Timmy Hightower. I believe they rushed for as a team around 1,500 yards, which in Cardinals history is really quite impressive and the best running attack that before this year I had seen from the Cardinals that I can absolutely remember if you're talking about an effective running game. I don't know how to react to this because I'm just so used to the Cardinals being dreadful at running the ball. But suddenly, I think I saw you tweeted it, is that Steve Keim has built up this team quite well. He saw, well, you said it was that he copied Dallas's way of building the offensive line. I'll go back a little bit further. He saw how San Francisco did it. Eventually they fell apart, but he looks at how they built their offensive line. You see how Dallas built their offensive line, and they copied that. He sees how Seattle does well with the defensive backfield. When they copy that. And so now you've kind of got the best of both worlds with a fantastic game. Turnovers on the defensive side of the ball. Oh, my heavens, they were just going after ball. Tony Jefferson playing like a madman for some reason more than normal. Carson Palmer only having to throw 14 passes, only getting 3 touchdowns and 11 completions. I don't understand this. I've never experienced the Cardinals being this good. This is almost video game quality Cardinals.
Yeah, and what it is, and what I meant by that, I think a couple of people that took that as like a negative or a shot at time because everybody's so intent on defending. You know, Keim is a genius. And
well, yeah, he is genius. He's following what other people do well. He's copying the right people.
Well, exactly. It's a copycat league. So you do, you know, you see what teams are having success, and you kind of build on that. And the Cardinals couldn't go the route necessarily the Cowboys or, you know, even the 49ers went, where they were able to draft. I mean, because the 49ers had 3 first-rounders on that offensive line. You know, like you're talking about, and the Cowboys, I think, have 4. And, you know, so the Cardinals, in terms of doing it similarly, they have kind of, but it's more about they've put an emphasis on, hey, the offensive line is not where we're going to lose games. We're not going to lose games because we can't run the ball, and we're not going to lose games because Carson Palmer's injured because he's getting hit all the time. And I think that's kind of where this came in. You know, they signed Del Dierry, huge contract last year, drafted, you know, Jonathan Cooper top 7 2 years ago. You know, they've developed Earl Watford and Bobby Massey.
They signed you Potty. Well, and I'm going to even point to the drafting of DJ Humphreys as a continued emphasis to address the offensive line. Well, as many people as would like to see DJ play this year, I thought from the start, I thought the whole plan was, this is a guy for next year. The way Keim talked, he said, had he stayed in school, he would have been a top 5 pick next year. The Cardinals just basically got themselves a top 5 pick a year early. What that means moving forward, we'll see what happens because he's, you know, got some growing to do, but it's just furthering the idea that the offensive line is a priority on this team.
Well, and what they're trying to do is, and the reason I said Dallas was because they're trying to go the same route because you have a veteran, and I say that term with instead of saying old, you have a veteran quarterback in Carson Palmer who, like Tony Romo, has had his nicks and bruises through the years. And so now, you know, and same thing with Tony. You know, Tony's hurt, and the Cowboys season's basically over. You know, obviously he'll be back in week 10 or so, and maybe they'll be able to make a run. But, you know, I think you and I and all the fans are kind of feel the same way. If, God forbid, anything happens to Carson, you know.
They're a very average team when they go down to Stanton.
Yeah, so I think seeing the dominance from the offensive line, which allows the entire offense to be dominant, and then on the flip side, I think on the back end, you continue to see maybe right now the best secondary in the league. You know, they haven't. I hate to take away from what they're doing, because I hate the, you know, oh, they haven't really played anybody. But to be fair, they haven't really played a good quarterback yet. They did get picked apart a little bit in game one, and then in the half that Jay Cutler played until Tony Jefferson ended his day. But, you know, you look at it, you can only play the teams that are in front of you. And so far, they've not just played them well, but in four out of five games, all wins, obviously, they've dominated. And I think it starts from the front end of the offensive line and the back end of the defense. And that's kind of where I said that, because it reminds me of Dallas and what they did and how they became, you know, the best quote-unquote offense in football last year. And then, you know, we've seen Seattle and their defensive backfield kind of being the lead to the best defense in football over the last, what, 3 years now. So it's a compliment, because I think Keim is mimicking what has been successful in the NFL, and in that he's created a team that is really, you know, as we'll talk about in a second, really is a Super Bowl contender, you know, barring any health issues.
And you look at the and it's really kind of interesting as you talk about that with the Cowboys, and you have a team that's kind of teetering as a very average team, but then they protect Tony Romo and they become an elite team. And that's even with a shaky defense, and the Cardinals are doing it now with a very good defense, or a seemingly potentially great defense, and has played very well. But if we look on the other side, is there anything out of that game that you look at and see as a negative takeaway? I can think of one, and that would be just that we talk about how good the offensive line is. Well, in comparison, I have to kind of put that in context. The Cardinals have always had bad offensive lines. Even their Super Bowl run with Kurt Warner, the statistics said that their offensive line was okay. But if you look at that line, I mean, when you have Levi Brown starting at a right tackle, and I can't even remember the name of the guy on the left tackle who was
Mike Gandy.
Oh yeah, and then, you know, journeyman at best. He was an okay starter. I mean, he was a serviceable starter in the league, but that wasn't a good line. That was an okay line. This line has the potential to be really good, but they still have some communication issues. Whether it's just because they haven't had much time on all together, but they have some communication issues. They have some mental lapses that you're just like, they're supposed to be better than that.
But, you know, I think that comes from the right side a lot. I mean, yeah, Upati and Belbier got screwed up on that one, but I think that's a case of that was their second game together. You know, I don't really count the preseason, because those guys have done so much in their career that they needed, you know, they need actual game work. And so I think that was kind of what happened there. When you talk about the right side, and you talk about Jonathan Cooper, who's, you know, we say this, I think, because partially it's true, but partially because we want to use this as an excuse for why it's true. But he's basically a rookie, you know, out there. And so I think you're seeing the learning curves that come with that, and issues that can stem from that, and that really comes from the right side a lot of the times. You know, we've seen them get beat on a lot of different, you know, kind of games over on that side. The Rams did it. Obviously, we saw it in this game where there was no game. It was just Jonathan Cooper getting blown off the ball, you know, on that instance. And so I think, when you just look at it overall, I think it's a growing thing on the left side in terms of just playing together. On the right side, I think it's just a growing thing in terms of maturity. I think we know what Bobby Massey is. He's going to have games like he did against the Lions where he's just kind of not good. But then he's going to have games where he is very good. And so, you know, he's an average, and you put those things together, and that's what you get. He's an average right tackle in the league who's going to get paid a lot of money, and by a team not named the Arizona Cardinals, And I think that's kind of where this ends. And so for now, I think you're going to see some struggles throughout until probably week 8-ish, because then it'll be about, what, 5 games in for Upati and Villebier together, and it'll be about 6 games in for Cooper and Massey together. And you know, the one, I guess, good thing so far is you haven't had a lot of issues up the middle, and so that's been good work. Is part of the equation, and that's more than I think some people expect.
I lost you for just a second. Can you repeat the last little bit? You kicked out.
Oh, I just was saying that, you know, with the left side, they're only about, what, 2 games in together. The right side is only, this will be their 3rd game together, I think, or this was their 3rd game. So I think you're just seeing, you know, the manifestation of the working together. And like I said, the best thing has been that Lyle Finneline has actually been fairly good in the middle. So
and,
I think
and
that...
You mentioned that inside, and that's... You probably have to think, as important as the edge play is, for a guy like Carson Palmer, who needs to be able to, you know, step up into the pocket, that interior pass block is almost the most important part. Because if you got to get beat off the edge, he's savvy enough to step up. He's not like some of those younger quarterbacks who take really deep drops. He doesn't. He's pretty good with his feet, and he's very good about moving up in the pocket. And you see the problems that he has are when he isn't able. So when there's a push up the middle, he's not able to step into it. So that's where becomes an erratic Carson Palmer.
Yeah, and I think we saw that, you know, on the first series, and Bruce talked about that in his post game that, you know, he's getting hit by the time he's had the ball in his hand, and that was really the guards. And so I think, you know, as Cooper just is about getting up to speed in the game, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to play like the 7th overall pick at all this year through, what are we in, 5 games? Through 5 games, I'd say he has not, but... you know, it'll come, I think. I don't know. You know, when you're talking about the 7th overall pick and you're talking about a guard, I think we all are assuming or hoping for a guy that's an all-pro.
Yes.
And I think that expectation is very, very unreal and unfair. But it comes with the territory. So, it goes back and forth. But I thought... outside of the early play, I thought he had his best game this season. But that was just by my metrics. I didn't actually go look at all those PFF grades to see what they had to say.
So let's kind of look at it now. The Cardinals get the big win, and through 5 games of the season at 4-1, they sit now with the best point differential in the league, 100% on the note. They scored 190 points in 5 games. They've only allowed 90. And here's this. This is a kicker of a stat. And if you're to believe this, if you're to believe in these sort of things, you must believe this makes the Cardinals a lock for the Super Bowl. Not because what they are doing right now, but means that it will move forward and carry through. This is a stat that the Cardinals release in their game notes after the win, which is something they do after every win. They don't release game notes of achievements and things after losses, but they do after wins. And after the win on Sunday, the Cardinals and they reached the 100-point differential part. And here's the stat. Since 1975, before this season, there have been 6 teams to have at least a 100-point differential, positive 100 or more point differential, through 5 games in the season. The stat is this. All 6 of those teams since 1975 up until this season who had at least 100-point differential through 5 games, every single one made the Super Bowl. 4 of them won the Super Bowl. The 2 teams that did not win the Super Bowl were the perfect 16-0 New England Patriots from the 2007 season whose, you know, season came down to the, a couple of fluky plays. And then the previous year, when the Bears got off to that massively great start with Rex Grossman and then faltered in the Super Bowl, giving Peyton Manning his one championship. But that makes 6 for 6. Six teams in, since 1975, so since before even I was born. I was born in 1977, so since that time, six teams have had a point differential of at least 100 points. Six teams have gone to the Super Bowl. Four have won the Super Bowl. And that includes a 1975 Steelers team who won the Super Bowl, the 1991 Redskins team. They had a 111-point differential. Green Bay, their championship with Brett Favre in 1996, they had a 101-point differential through five games. 1999, the St. Louis Rams, the greatest show on turf, 123-point differential. That is the record for point differential. The Bears in 2006 had 120 after five games, and the Patriots of that dominant team in 07 was 117 up after five games. Now, the question is this. Now, obviously, as a fan, you look at that stat and you're like, oh my gosh, this is historic. The Cardinals are doing it this year. But then you also think, wait, what if they don't? And they became that one team. So I want to look at it this way. Now, obviously, it's trending towards that. If you were to look at this team, Seth, are they really a Super Bowl team? Are they?
I think when you look at the NFL landscape right now, you know, I think there's about five teams. I might be missing somebody, but there's about five teams that I would say have legitimate, like, I would put them as Super Bowl favorites, maybe. Like, not that they're going to win the Super Bowl, but they have a chance to get there. Like, I would put them as the favorites. And then there's probably another five teams that are contenders that I probably can't think of off the top of my head. But, you know, outside of Green Bay, I don't know. Clearly, Seattle is developing still. So their defense is still struggling a little bit. Their offense is still finding their footing, and they're missing their best player in Marshawn Lynch. So I don't know if we know who or what Seattle is yet, but I think Green Bay's the, you know, quote-unquote team to beat in the NFC, but I think the Cardinals are right next to them. And in that, I would say, yeah, they're legitimate Super Bowl contenders or favorites or anything of that nature. You know, and I think the way that they're constructed, if they continue to run the ball well, it just makes everything easier, because we've seen this team, you know, we always say goes as Carson Palmer goes, but if you can take some of the pressure off Palmer and you can allow him to take very calculated risks and not have to throw the ball 46 times, you know, this team's going to be really hard to beat, and I think we've seen that in four out of the five games so far.
And what I like about this team, you have to look at the team, even regardless of who they've played, because they haven't had a competitive schedule yet, but things are going to turn around. You know, look, Here, look at it this next week. It looks very, very likely that the Bears could be 3-3 after this week, because they, you know, they play Detroit. Although I can see Detroit winning that game. The Saints are kind of a dumpster fire right now. The 49ers are a mess as well. The Bears are something else, and the Detroit Lions are a hot mess themselves. But as we pointed out before, the way they're winning matters. They are stomping teams, and you look at some of these dominant teams of the last of these teams that Seattle, Denver, when they were playing at the top, New England, they absolutely dominate games, and there's no doubt who is the better team. Even when you're playing lesser competition, they're not toying with them, they're not letting up. They are legitimately just stomping on teams, and that's what great teams do. If you look defensively, I you look and they're pretty much the same team as last year, more or less. You've got a better Patrick Peterson, but you lose Antonio Cromartie. You're playing a safety 100% of the time at linebacker. You're getting almost no pass rush, but they're playing effectively against a run, and they cover receivers well enough. They didn't lose anything. I don't think they really gained anything. They're kind of a wash, I think, defensively. But the difference is this year, instead of an offense that's just opportunistic and just is doing just enough, which is what we saw when they were winning games over the last couple of years, there was the potential for good offense, but it was doing just enough. This offense has turned into a very good offense, and we can point to the running game to that. And because of that, yes, this is a Super Bowl team. I think, no doubt. I mean, if we're looking at teams now, definitely, yes, Super Bowl team. Will that turn it out to be a Super Bowl team? History says yes, and I have to like the chances. But as long as, you know, as Palmer's still playing quarterback, and I have no reason to think that the running game's going to disappear unless they lose both Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington, and even then, they lose Dave Johnson as well. If Carson Palmer plays 13 or 14 of the 16 games, I think the Cardinals are right there. You'd have to think, most certainly, you've got Green Bay because of Aaron Rodgers. You've got the Cardinals, and then you have to consider this as the secret. You can never put them away because you know they're lurking talent wise. You just have to. They are, as of right now, a Super Bowl team, and this is one of the most gratifying times to be a Cardinals fan right now.
Yeah, and it's fun to watch because they're so diverse in how they attack. And like I said, they're able to run the ball, and then that opens up the passing game, you know, so people can't just tee off on Carson Palmer, and they have, you know, weapons in John Brown and Larry Fitzgerald, and you can sprinkle in a little Andre Ellington and David Johnson, and then, you know.
And we're never mind, we're not even talking about Michael Floyd, who is, my goodness, this was a 1,000-yard receiver not too long ago.
Yeah, and so we'll see, you know, we'll see how it continues. Like you and I said, you can't blame them for who they're playing. So the fact, you know, whenever somebody says, oh, they haven't beaten anybody, well, they haven't beaten anybody, you're right. But you know what they have done? They've dominated people. And that's what's more impressive to me, because good teams beat bad teams, and they do it with relative ease. And in 4 out of 5 games, and if you want to not count the first one, if you want to say 3 out of 5 games, they've done that. And so, you know, getting mad at them for doing what they should be doing is, I wouldn't agree with.
Let's turn to the injury news and the impact, and specifically talk about Dwight Freeney. Before we talk Freeney first, let's talk about the impact that these three players have going down. Alex Okafor, he's known as the Cardinals' best pass rusher off the edge, and obviously he is. Now, has he had the statistical impact? No, not really, which is a little disappointing, you have to say. It is disappointing. However, he is getting more attention than he has in the past. He is disrupted. He's not doing as much. That will be missed. How much he will be missed is yet to be seen because, you know, since he's not getting the actual sacks, when you put Marcus Golden in the starting lineup and you put Dwight Freeney into the role that Golden have as the situational pass rusher, where you come in on the nickel dime pass packages and to rush the passer. But you look at two very, I probably will be underrated losses, and that is Kenny Demons and Chris Clemens. Kenny Demons is actually a really important special teams player. Not super fast, but he's big and he can hit. He's a guy that probably will, you may notice a difference. Chris Clemens is the same thing. Real solid on special teams. Now, special teams play, you can typically get picked up from other, especially since they're not the star special teams player, but they're important. Maybe a Gabe Martin or someone else can step up, or this is probably where Shaq Riddick may be able to make his impact as to make a move on special teams. But I'm interested to see how the special teams, how the transitions team changes dynamically, if there is a dynamic change with them. Well, do you think there'll be much of an impact, at least of those two guys?
You know, special teams has been so good right now, maybe outside of the punter. So,
And Bruce Arians still is completely satisfied publicly with the play of Butler, which, you know,
oh, yeah.
I guess.
And he always will be. That's his way. Like, I went back and thought about it, and this is not to get too far off on a tangent, but I went back and thought about it. I can't remember any, like, average players or units in general that Arians has gone off on. Like, even when the offensive line started, or when he started here, and they had Levi Brown, you know, he was always gushing, right? Like, he was always talking good and talking about how other guys need to do other things and blah, blah, blah. And so I feel like the only time he's hard on people is when they are good, i.e.,
Calais,
you know,
Campbell,
now,
Jonathan
Calais
Cooper.
Calais Campbell, Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those guys. And the bad guys, he goes the other route, and he's like, hey, you know, I'm completely happy with his performance. So, when it comes to the special teams, I think you do have to be worried in the sense of a close game type thing. Clearly, you know, it wasn't going to matter this week, but if you get into a game, I mean, Antonio Brown coming up, for instance, on punt return, you have a bad punter, you all of a sudden you lose two coverage guys, key coverage guys, not just, you know, not just guys, but key coverage guys. Demons is a key special teamer, and Clemens has played well on specials. You know, all of a sudden, now maybe there is something to worry about. Maybe in a close game where Michael Vick is your quarterback and you can't move the ball at all, you know, that a big punt return plays a, you know, role in that game. But I think it's only going to be in certain situations against, you know, good teams or in close games. And that's usually when special teams shows up, you know, in close games. So as far as the outside linebacker thing goes, it's going to be interesting, man, because as you and I have talked about before, I'm not sure how good their linebackers are still. So I'm interested to see what happens with them, because they're playing at a good level, but they're able to really feed off of what the secondary is doing. You know, they don't really create any type of pass rush right now still. So we'll see what happens with more playing time. And this was something I brought up to you before the show. Just an interesting, you know, if you're into PFF grades and things like that, Marcus Golden's two worst games, you know, grade-wise, have been the games he's played the most in. So I'm interested to see if that's a trend or if that's just something that, you know, that happened in those two games. You know, so if he does get the starting nod, he played, I think, 45 of, like, 96 snaps or some crazy number like that for the Lions. If he ends up playing, you know, double and he's in the 80 to 90 range, how does his performance look? Lamar Woodley really hasn't done anything this year to write home about or to be too upset about, to be honest. So I think their linebacker play has been, the outside linebacker play has been uninspiring, but not
passable. Passable would be the word.
Yeah, but passable. That's a good word for it.
How much do you think Dwight Freeney has in the tank? Because if you look at it, if the league really thought he had that much left in the tank, you'd think he'd already have a job. Or maybe it was just a case of money. And it finally, with the opportunity to play on a Cardinals team that looks to be, you know, Super Bowl bound, or at least have a good shot at it, that he lowered his price. But you say it all the time. But they keep talking about the number of pressures he gets, and he was a top five for among outside linebackers for 3-4 schemes in pressures. Only had 4 sacks, but was disrupting the quarterback play a lot. And while that seems to be the new thing, even with the coaches, is to talk about disruptions, you don't like to you overrate those states. Those stats, you've done that a number of times. Do you think Freeney really can do anything, even on a limited basis? And I want to point to, for example, John Abraham. John Abraham did nothing in 2013 until he was put in a full-time role because he didn't know how to do it. He knew how to play every down. And when he wasn't all that good. Now Freeney's going to step into basically what Mark... we talked about this a little bit offline before the show. I thought perhaps that we would see more Kareem Martin, and we still might. We still might see more Kareem Martin just because of the way they had things set up, because Golden was playing behind Woodley, playing the strong side outside linebacker, typically over the right side where they, over the left side where they sometimes also had the tight end, a stronger edge holder, while you have Okafor playing the weak side to get more sacks. And while Golden has played a little of both sides just schematically because he normally would come in, but he's mostly played the right side. I'd have to go back and look. But now he's going to be that left side outside linebacker with Woodley starting on the right. And then Freeney will step in being that situational rusher that Golden was. Golden was doing pretty well as it. He's got the 1 sack, well, basically 2 half sacks. Do you think Freeney's got anything left in the tank, and will he be effective in a very limited role?
I just went and looked right now because I wanted to see. He played about half the snaps in San Diego last year, so he was about a 50% guy. And I think, you got 4 sacks and a bunch of, hurries and stuff like that. And, but was San Diego's defense any good? I really don't remember. So all the pressures in the world led to nothing. Like you said, how I feel about pressures. Pressures are only important if they lead to, a turnover, or if it's a third down and it leads to like an incompletion or something like that. Pressures that just are pressures and lead to nothing, and then they're able to, play the next play and it's like the whole interceptable passes thing. I saw a funny thing from my buddy Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, and I made fun of him for it. But he said, Colin Kaepernick, what are we talking about in this game if whoever Colin Kaepernick threw the pass to, that it should have been intercepted and it wasn't? He says, what are we talking about if that pass is intercepted? And I'm like, well, we weren't. It wasn't intercepted, so we don't have to talk about it. This whole what if thing, it's such a different way to interpret the game, and it's interpreting the game in a way so you can create statistics and rankings and things like that. That's just how I feel about it. So to get back to the pressures thing, if the pressures aren't leading to anything, which for San Diego they obviously weren't, then they're not going to be worth anything in Arizona either. But if the pressures that lead to, interceptions, or if the pressures that lead to cleanup sacks for Marcus Golden or, Kareem Martin or one of the defensive linemen, then they're good plays. But if they're just pressures like he had last year, well, there's a reason he was on the street till game 6 of the NFL season. And as much as we like to think in Arizona Cardinal land that all these guys are holding out to play with the Cardinals, to get a shot with the Cardinals on their roster, they're just holding out till they get an offer on the
yes.
table. And then a lot of times it works out. Look at Chris Johnson. Nobody wanted him. Like, he could have been had by 31 other NFL teams, and nobody had any interest in him. And the Cardinals came calling late. It just worked out.
It did. In fact, 2 of the Cardinals, if you look at the Cardinals since July, they've signed off the street 3 former Pro Bowlers in Jermaine Gresham, Chris Johnson, and now Dwight Freeney. Now, there were extenuating circumstances for both Gresham and Johnson. Obviously, both of them had off-season injuries and situations. Gresham with the back surgery, he's been fine. He's been nothing special. And, you know, if you were expecting greatness, you just ask any Cincinnati Bengals fan, he was just one ball of disappointment and potential all wrapped in one. But he's been solid. He's not been massively productive, but he's done his job well and better than, you know, if you think about who was our number two tight end last year, most of the year was Rob Housler. He's a massive improvement over Rob Housler. And then you have Chris Johnson. Obviously, he got shot. So that was enough to keep him away, plus his age, plus probably there you could say something to the persona or the image, or even point a little bit to race, the type of guy he is with the long hair and the gold grill. And so you got the grill, and so you've got a couple of things, and he was a backup last year. So why would you bring in a 30-year-old, shot in the shoulder, former star running back when 30-year-olds don't sort of tend to, you know, fall off the table in terms of production? And we'll see with Freeney. He was more or less healthy, but, you know, no one
is wanted. I think a lot of it is that he's a very role-specific player now. And while that is a very important role, if the Cardinals thought they could use him, they would have signed him way before this.
And right? Reportedly, they did have discussions, but the price was too high. I remember this dialogue coming up about Freeney towards the end of the offseason, beginning of training camp. And I kept saying this. They already have Dwight Freeney on the roster. His name is Lamar Woodley. Washed-up old guy who isn't terribly productive anymore. They already got him. He's Lamar Woodley. This good guy to have in the locker room. Super hard worker. He's great for the other players. But I didn't know what to expect from him. And that's kind of looking at Freeney only. Now you are, you know, you're potentially, if he has anything left in the tank, he's going to look better late in the year because he's had the first, basically, 2 months off, 2-3 months off, because he hasn't been hitting. And as long as he's in decent football shape, he can produce more down the stretch than you would have seen. You know, kind of what happened to Larry Foote last year. Productive early, fell apart late.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens, because, like you said, like, if he comes in and, you know, I'm not expecting him to even play this week. Maybe he does, but I'm not expecting him to play this week. But, you know, if next week he plays and he's able to produce, you know, in 15 to 20 snaps, he's able to get, you know, those five mounted pressures on Joe Flacco, then maybe, you know, you see a little more of him the next week. So we'll see what happens. Here's what I'll say, though. The signing can't hurt, because your options were go with Kareem Martin, who's still trying to figure out how to play the position, Marcus Golden, whose motor is probably going to blow out if he's asked to do what he does for, you know, 70 snaps a game as opposed to 20, and then, you know, like you said, Lamar Woodley, who is...
By all accounts, already washed up.
Yeah, I mean, he's there. Like I said, like, I'm not trying to take anything away from what he's done this year, because he's been a very good team player and he's played well.
And within the scheme, he does push the pocket, he does hold the edge. He just doesn't get sacks unless, you know, Colin Kaepernick runs into him.
Yeah. So I don't think you have a lot of options, right? So it's not like anything, like, it's not like it can get worse than not a lot of production, I guess. I mean, and if he's just in on passing downs, then, you know, you don't have to worry about what he's doing against the run and so on and so forth. So, you know, like I said, it can't hurt based on where they are and what they need right now.
Let's look ahead to the Steelers. You would have thought, looking at the schedule early on, that was the biggest game of this early part of the schedule, only to realize that, you know, they're likely going to play without Ben Roethlisberger. What, assuming Michael Vick is still the star, what do you see as the biggest challenge for Arizona, and what do you think will happen in that game?
I think the biggest challenge is to continue to stay focused against bad teams. Because Pittsburgh's not a bad team, but like Arizona, like Dallas, when you're missing your quarterback, you're a bad team, right? So that's where Pittsburgh is right now. They're a team that has the best running back in football, and he's not able to do a ton because everybody's just saying, okay, Michael Vick, beat us. I dare you to beat us, Michael Vick. And, you know, he completed the one big pass.
And he had the one big scramble.
Yeah, the one big scramble, and so he did enough to win the game, but that was against the San Diego team whose
defense,
you know,
isn't all that good at all.
No,
and
no,
even then,
really
think about this. They didn't even trust Michael Vick enough to even take the snap on that last play.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there is something to say about putting the ball in your hands of your best player. I'll give them that. But yeah, this was, you know, this is how you judge a team. To me, a good team, you expect to go in there and win. A win's a win. You know, you'd like to see them dominate because, you know, on paper they're superior in talent, especially as crippled as Pittsburgh is. But, you know, if they sneak out a win on the road, it's still a win on the road, early game, something that the Cardinals have struggled with, even in the Bruce Arians era. They still struggled with those early Eastern time zone games. And so, you know, let's see if that happens this week. But honestly, I mean, they're better. I mean, like, that's weird to say. I know a lot now, but they're just better than the Steelers. And so if they don't win at this point, I think you'd be more upset than anything.
Well, and you look at now, there's one thing, and I heard people talking about it on the radio today. There's one thing you get concerned about. The one, if you can look at the schedule so far, their one quality back, and yes, Matt Forte is a quality back. He also managed to get over 100 yards from scrimmage against him. Running the ball, but
he did have a good game.
But then Todd Gurley, except for four plays, but then those other four plays were break your back types of plays. Le'Veon Bell, you have to think, is probably better than Todd Gurley. Now the Cardinals were playing from behind; they were getting a little desperate, and that sort of, and they got. The undisciplined gap-wise. They have to be... We don't know. We've seen the run defense be really good, but then we've seen breakdowns. If they can keep him in check, I'm not necessarily shut him down, but keep him contained, then they'll be in good shape. But if he has a Todd Gurley-type game, anything happens. And I look at the team, yes. If Ben Roethlisberger plays in that game, you consider it a toss-up game. That's a game where...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But no Ben Roethlisberger. This should be a game that the Cardinals, especially because the Pittsburgh defense still is really not that good. They've shown flashes. They've got some talent, but they're not playing all that well. If you saw what San Diego was able to do, they just... Phillip Rivers picked them apart. The Cardinals should be able to do the same thing. So in terms of the running game, as long as they don't dig themselves a hole, they should be able to control that game. Not necessarily blow them out, but at least control the game to where if they don't fall more than, you know, 3 or 7 points behind and they don't tie it up fairly quickly like they were able to do with Detroit, if they're able to play that sort of game, they'll have a solid two-possession win.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it and you talk about, you know, Le'Veon Bell, I think the first thing that you have to think about with Bell that's going to be different than any other team that they've played thus far, even the Bears with, you know, the excellent Matt Forte, who you said, I think he had like 110 all-purpose yards or something like that, which is a nice game. They're going to give Bell the ball. Like, he's going to get 30 touches. So that's going to be interesting to watch because we haven't seen that in an opponent yet. So I think that is the one thing that you can be concerned about, because even if they're behind by 14,
they'll still feed them the ball.
They're still going to get Le'Veon Bell the ball. They're not going to let Michael Vick throw the ball around 40 times.
please let Michael Vick throw the ball 40 times. Here's something that's kind of happened. The Cardinals haven't played any. Look at the quarterbacks they've played against. You know what happens after? You notice something? Every time the Cardinals play a quarterback, he's suddenly the worst quarterback in the league. Jay Cutler, Colin Kaepernick, Matthew Stafford. Come on, Michael Vick, please. Throw the ball 30 times. It'll be so much fun because he's a turnover machine. Now, here, 5 years ago, I wanted him. Even in 2011, I said, no, see if we can get Michael Vick. I'm glad they didn't, but he is a turnover machine.
Yep, and you kind of look at what this team is right now, and they feast off turnovers and controlling the ball, like you said, and being able to do that. And I think at this point, the advantage is in Arizona's hands. If Ben plays, I think it's still advantage Arizona. I think it goes less because we've seen great quarterbacks in Ben Roethlisberger. He's a great quarterback. Play hurt and play well. So, you don't ever want to discount a great quarterback, but I think even with Roethlisberger, the fact that he's hobbled and on, going to be on one leg if he does play, I don't think there's any way that Arizona is not, like you said, in control of this game. If they lose this game, I think we re-examine the Super Bowl, what did I call them earlier, like Super Bowl favorite title. Maybe they're in that contender group then, as opposed to a favorite. And I think that'll be where, this game kind of dictates, shows us a lot. Are they truly a favorite? Are they a team that is bound for greatness? Or are they a very good team that's taking advantage of a lot of bad teams? I think that, it's a really going to be a fun test and something fun to watch this weekend. And, in the end, I think you're going to see something like 28-20 or 28-17 Cardinals win.
I can totally see that. The matchup I can't wait to see as well. Patrick Peterson more than did his job against Calvin Johnson and got a call for a couple of really, really ticky-tack holding calls. I thought they were, at least the second one was absolute garbage. But otherwise, he had really a good game against Johnson. Antonio Brown, though, that's a completely different bear there. That's a completely different animal, and I want to see how that goes. Obviously, if Michael Vick's playing, it's not going to be the same sort of thing because he's not nearly as good as getting him the ball. But woo!
Yeah, he's been one of the worst receivers, in fantasy, talking fantasy, obviously, now. But he's been one of the worst receivers in the league with Michael Vick as his quarterback. So I think that, that plays into the Cardinals' favor because that's what we talk about with taking advantage. And, maybe they have caught some breaks on their schedule thus far. But you play the games in front of you, and you know what? If Michael Vick's the quarterback,
you can't
do anything about that other than win the game decisively. And I really truly believe they've earned that, that ability or that right to have that thought that they should win this game decisively. And I think you and I both believe that, and we'll see that on Sunday.
Well, and that should bring us to the end of another All Cardinals show. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. We've talked Cardinals. Now, I don't believe we're going to have a preview show this week, so Seth and I did discuss a little bit of Cardinals Steelers coming up, but that wraps up our latest All Cardinals show. We've talked about the good and then a little bit of not so good. We talked White Freeney and more. Thanks for listening, Cardinals fans. You've had us for nearly an hour. We appreciate the listen. Make sure you, if you haven't already subscribe to us on iTunes or follow us on Blog Talk Radio, or simply become a member of RevengeOfTheBirds.com and become part of the community. Comment away of the largest, it's the best, definitely the best community of Arizona Cardinals fans on the web, and a growing one right now since the Cardinals are pretty good. So on behalf of Bench of the Roots Radio, I'm Jess Root, that's Seth Cox. We will talk to you again next week.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.